Hi, you've tuned in to the Lovely Travels podcast, where we talk about all things travel and adventure. My name is Emma Lovell, also known as Lovely, and I have a mission to visit every UN-recognised country in the world while raising awareness for mental health. Join me as we revisit some of my past adventures, speak to fellow travellers and interesting locals, all while following the journey to 195 countries. I'll be joined soon by my co-pilot, Darius, in Germany. And sometimes we're even going to hit the road together. Make sure to join in the adventure by following me on Instagram, Lovely Travels. You can also join our Facebook group, Lovely Travels Community, and learn more about us at the website, lovelytravels.com. But for now, it's listening time. Travel vicariously along with us. Welcome back to the Lovely Travels podcast. How are you doing today, Darius?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm very well, and I'm very much looking forward to this episode because it's one of my friends and former colleagues and someone I got to travel with. So
the infamous Susie Sanofsky.
That was very well pronounced, yes. So Susie and I worked together at World Vision Australia. Well, actually, when I met her, I wasn't working there. I went on a trip to Uganda and she was the photographer. And she took beautiful photos and videos, and we actually just had a really awesome little crew. And then, about 6 months later, I had a contract at World Vision, so we became colleagues.
And that's nice.
Sort of both of us came in and out of the organization. That we say with World Vision, it's a revolving door. You never really leave. You keep coming back, which she'll talk more about her work there. So I'm not currently I just must preface that we are both, neither of us are representing World Vision. We are both former employees of World Vision Australia and World Vision International.
The opinions presented are your own and not World Vision's. Back off, lawyers.
Yeah, so she will share a little bit about some trips she's had. She's done a lot of travel with World Vision, and I have been fortunate also to travel with World Vision. But she's also just done a lot of travel in her life and through the nature of her work and her wonderful skills of photography. She's had the pleasure of visiting heaps of places. So we just had... Probably could have talked for hours, just as I'm doing now. Yep. So we probably should cut to it and have a little listen.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Welcome. Today we have Susie Sanofsky here, who is my former World Vision colleague and a very avid traveller. So welcome, Susie. And so... I mean, I've just probably given it away, but no, tell us a little bit about you and maybe a little bit about, how we know each other.
I am from Melbourne, Australia, and I currently live in Melbourne, Australia. And as many people know, we are in lockdown at the moment, so not a lot of travelling happening at the moment. I can't go further than 5 kilometres from my house. And I have worked at World Vision for 14 years. It's actually 14 years this week.
Happy anniversary.
And so in the early years I started working there, I actually didn't travel, but then a few years on the travel started. And then we know each other, Emma. We went to Uganda in 2014, was it?
It was, yes.
It was, 2014. And I've been on a lot of trips, and in fact, I've been to Uganda more than once as well. So sometimes I don't necessarily remember the year, but yeah, we went with a couple of others from World Vision and Eden Riley as well. It was a very memorable and very fun trip.
Well, that means a lot to me, yes, because you've been on many, many trips, and you were at the time doing like photography and some video, but you have done quite a few roles over the time, right?
Yeah, that's right. So on that trip, I was the photographer, and yes, I definitely did shoot some video as well. Since then, so in about 2015, I went to Jordan and I was the communications director for World Vision Syria Response. And so since about 2015, I've been in more leadership roles. but still do lots of hands-on video editing and shooting and writing and all of that, which I still really enjoy.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And so you answered one of my other questions already, which is where are you from or where do you live? That you kind of got a, well, yeah, you're from Melbourne, but you've got a heritage that's quite interesting.
Yeah, my parents are ethnically Albanian and they themselves were born and raised in the former Yugoslavia and what is now the Republic of North Macedonia. I believe it's now called as of like last year, but they are ethnically Albanian, just like Mother Teresa. And I have travelled to the former Yugoslavia once when I was a tiny little kid, and I don't remember the trip, and then once when I was in my 20s, which was really fun. I was there with my mum and my sister, and I still have an uncle and aunties and nephews, cousins there as well. And at the time, the last time I visited, I still had my grandmother. Unfortunately, she's passed away since then. Mm. But I actually have been to Albania too, once, believe it or not, on a World Vision trip, which is fairly random. And then I went about 3 or 4 years ago and it's really, really beautiful. Stunning mountains. It was pretty easy to get around because I do speak Albanian. I felt very at home there, probably not that surprising really, but I had a great time. I really did.
Yes, I was going to ask if you speak Albanian and what does it sound like?
I don't speak it that well, but I understand it really well. It's kind of a bit, there are some, it's Latin based and there are some words that are similar to Italian and French.
Yeah.
So would you like me to say, you know, I don't know. So,
yeah, I don't think I'm going to have an Albanian guest anytime soon. I don't know.
There aren't that many of us. Une cam embrin Susanna, which means my name is Susanna. Susanna is my actual birth name, which is quite an Albanian name, and obviously it's a bit of an international name as well. I don't know. I could say lots of other things. I don't know what else you'd like me to say.
Maybe you could say that you visited there and that it was very beautiful.
Unisha de Stupidia and Ershta Shume Bukud Vandi, which means I've been to Albania and it's a very beautiful place.
Ah, that's very cool.
I'm glad I could remember how to say it.
You're like, do you want me to say it? And then wait, can I say it?
Yeah.
You got to switch the brain a little bit.
I understand it very well. Like a lot of Aussie kids, our parents spoke to us in a different language and we answered back in English. So my understanding is a lot better than my speech. But when I was in Albania, I was actually surprised at how decent my Albanian was because I didn't have a choice. You're in a taxi and you're like, this guy doesn't speak English, so Albanian it is.
I think taxis and small shops are the best place to practice the language because they really, you know, funnily enough, taxis, you'd think that they would, but no, they so often don't. And you're like, I have to communicate. I need to get somewhere. So you quickly pick up some words and make it happen. Pointing is helpful except when they're driving and
trying to figure things out. Keep your eye on the road.
Yeah, but listen to my terrible language skills. No, yours were good. But, it's really cool. I remember I met an Albanian guy when I was living in London and it was just like, it just sounds so exotic. You're just like, where is Albania? Like, it just...
There are only a few million people in the country itself and you don't meet that many Albanians. It's not like, you know, in Melbourne there's like lots of Italians and lots of Greeks and, you know, that kind of thing. But Albanians, there's little pockets of Albanians around the place, but there aren't that many of us.
Yeah, it was very, it made me want to go. And so it's like, you know, it's definitely on the list as
many other countries. Beautiful.
Yeah. And how did your parents go? So did they just choose to come, if you don't mind me asking, or did they?
Don't mind you asking at all. They did choose to come. It was 1971 when they came to Australia. The plan was to come for 2 years. The plan was to go to Sydney. Somehow they ended up in Melbourne. It was the 70s, whatever. And my mum's sister was already here. And they stayed for 2 years. And then I think back then it was just, it was a lot. Australia was looking for people to come in. Mm-hmm. They were looking for more workers. And then after the 2 years, they decided they still liked it. And then I was born 2 years after they arrived, actually. So I was born here, and one of my brothers was also born here, and then my other two siblings were born overseas, and then my parents have been here ever since, and, I mean, they've been citizens for a long time as well, and they love Australia. They're very glad they moved here.
That's really cool. My parents came 10 years later, and the same story. You know, come for a year, end up here first. So they'll have their 40th anniversary next year, which means your parents will have their 50th, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
50 years in Australia. And it is nice to hear. I think there was at that time, yeah, they did really want, especially Europeans, they were inviting them to come. So it is nice to hear that people had, I mean, I'm sure the language was a barrier, but had a bit more of a welcome experience, whereas, you know, now we know that some people don't get that.
Yeah, my mum got her first job, I think, and she had little kids too. Within a week or something of getting here, she walked into a factory. I think it was in Broadmeadows. She knew the word job. Literally, that's the only word she knew. And she got a job and working on a production line. I can't remember what her first job was, but basically she's worked ever since then. So it was a different time.
Yeah, good on them though. That's really cool. And now it's a tough question. Well, one, do you know your country count? And then two of those countries you've been to, it's a big question, do you have a favourite?
I don't know my exact country count. I would imagine it's got to be well over 60, I would say, but I don't know for sure. And then there's always the, you know, what constitutes having visited a country? And then a friend of mine's like, well, you have to have gone there intentionally, you have to have slept there one night. I don't know. Years ago, a friend of mine wanted to know how many countries I'd been to, so she made me go through them. But that was years ago, and I've been to a lot since then. So I think back then it was 50, so I don't know. Maybe it's over 60. But like you, Emma, some countries I've been to like half a dozen times to one country.
Yeah.
Favorite country? That's a very difficult question to answer, but one country I've been to many times and I feel very comfortable there is Italy. It's definitely one of the favourites. It's hard to pick one favourite. It's kind of like, you know, picking your favourite child or picking your favourite nephew or niece.
Yeah.
But and I have studied Italian as well, so that helps. But I just feel, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but I feel at home there. And how good is pizza?
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, I had only been to Italy the first time in 2018, and everybody loves Italy. And if people who've never travelled or travelled very little want to go to Italy, and I get a bit like, if something's popular, I don't want to like it. So I'm like,
I like that too.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, whatever, what's this? And I was like, I think, you know, I think I'll like it and stuff like that. And then we went and I totally got it. It is very romantic. It is very beautiful. They have a wonderful way of life and a wonderful approach to life. And you just feel, I mean, not so much in Rome, but you feel that the energy level, like in Tuscany sort of region, and we were down in Positano, the energy level is just sort of like chill. And it's just this nice vibration of lifestyle.
Wine at lunchtime. And about six, seven, maybe the year, a couple of years before I met you, I did a week-long painting course in Umbria, which is the region next to Tuscany. And it was just like you imagine. I was in this like 400-year-old villa and there was amazing food and wine at lunchtime and painting. It was the greatest. It was so much fun.
I definitely have a great attitude, you know, and they like, you know, they've got their businesses and whatever, and they work the way they need to, and then they live the way they want to as well, and appreciate good food. And I don't actually always love Italian restaurants in Australia. Probably same in America. Like, I find it very big and heavy and things like that. But over there, it's not. It's proportioned well, and you can eat very rich, lovely food, but you're not eating like so excessively.
Yeah, and the pizza is as pizza should be. It's thin and there's like three ingredients on it as opposed to heaped and heaped with, you know, the way pizza's changed over the years. But I'm definitely a pizza snob because I think I've tasted some of the world's best pizza.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's funny though, because like every place you go, you know, we were in like Latvia, and we were, or Lithuania, sorry, and we were like, where should we go for dinner? And they're like, oh, there's the best pizza restaurant down the road. And you're like, no, it's like every place has an Irish bar, every place has a pizza place.
And you're so just, true.
And it's the best, though. It's the best. And you're like, is it better than Italy? Like, is it? But okay.
Do you know what's weird? Do you know what's really weird? I, for me, probably the best lasagna I've had in my life, and people are going to be like, what, was actually in Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. There is an amazing Italian restaurant, and it was, for me, probably the best lasagna I've had in my life.
That is funny.
And you know what? I'm sort of, I'm not intentionally name dropping, but I happened to be there with Melissa Doyle, who used to host Sunrise,
yeah,
World Vision Ambassador. And we, not just Melissa and I, but the others who were there, the Channel 7 crew, we went there again the same week because it was so good. To be fair, Mongolian cuisine is not great.
It's so maybe pretty heavy.
Maybe it was we were comparing. Yeah. Maybe it was because we were comparing it to the local cuisine. Anyway, but Mongolia is fantastic.
Yeah, well, it's funny because people have been asking lately, and I even put a question in the group the other day for the travel group, you know, what's your favourite holiday? And that's a big question, but for us, I guess it's quite front of mind, but we did 2 weeks there last year, and it was just, I'm so glad we did a tour. And just to go out and see the regional parts and everything like that. But I think it's just like you, we've been to so many places and you can usually like pick out things. You go, oh, that's like this or that's like that. There were parts of Mongolia that I was like, I cannot put my finger on it. It looks like nothing I've ever seen. It feels like nothing I've ever experienced. And it was very unique.
It is very unique. And there's so few people. There's like one person to 1,000 animals or something. I don't know what the numbers are, but you're just driving along. And I've been there twice with World Vision. And one of the car trips we did to get to the World Vision project was 12 hours. I feel like we saw about 3 people on that trip, but a whole lot of yaks and horses and other animals. It's just, and the way people live in the gurs or the yurts, as they're commonly called here. I have a little one. I have a little mini yurt just here, actually. It's just so unique. I'm with you. And it's the very extreme climate. And I was there at the beginning of summer. So I was there, like, climate-wise, the best time of the year. But I'd actually find it really interesting to go there in the middle of winter and just see what it's like.
Yeah, that would be really hectic. And you went with Tam, didn't you, and Ken, did you go with Ken Duncan?
Ken Duncan, yeah. So that was the second, no, that was the, I don't know, it was one of the times I went anyway. Yeah, but we, yeah, World Vision produced a book about mothers and children. And we went to 2 countries that couldn't be more different to each other, Bangladesh followed by Mongolia. Oh, and I'd been to both countries and I said to them, we're going to want to go to Bangladesh first because that is, it's such an interesting place, but it is very hectic. Mm. And then we're going to want to ease into and then go to Mongolia. You don't want to go the other way around. I think it would be a bit too shocking to go from hardly any people to 160 million people in this tiny country.
Oh, wow. Ken Duncan's one of my favourite photographers ever. When I saw that book and I found out that you guys had been on that trip, I was like a little fangirl. And I'm like, oh, my God, what was it like? And, oh, my God, the photos are so, like, the photos are beautiful. Like, and that's so cool that World Vision does those collaborations and those projects and, you know, yeah, gets to show the communities in that way. And
he's great. He's great fun to travel with. We spent, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks together. We had a really good time.
I always remember he's a gallery, I think, in QVB, and I would always go and visit. So, yeah, that was me fangirling a bit when I got there. And you just, you know, but the funny thing is you sort of, I think sometimes you think of these trips when you hear someone travelling for work, it can sound a bit luxurious, but it's not always that, is it? Is it, Susie?
It certainly is not, no. I've had some... I don't think I got sick on the trip to Uganda, did I? I don't think any of us did.
No, we were potato.
I mean, lots of time, you know, you don't get sick, but sometimes one work trip I went on to India, half of the group got there a week before we did because they were doing something a bit different. And some of them were hospitalised. Oh, wow. And then by the time I got there, I did get a bit sick, but I was able to manage it by, there was this, you probably tasted them, there was one flavour of chips or crisps, Spanish tomato tango, I think they are. It's literally all I could eat for 2 days. I had no appetite for anything else but Spanish tomato tango and probably Coke because, you know, Coke. And that's, so I kept working and I didn't take any time off and I thought, if I just eat those, I can keep going, but I cannot eat anything else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was kind of, yeah. And I'm a bit, when I pick up my camera, I go, well, I suppose you've seen it, but I go into a different zone. It's like a, not in a bad way, but it's like a photography blackout. So when we did this photo shoot in this slum in India, like I walked in there not feeling well. And when I picked up that camera, I actually kind of forgot that I wasn't well.
Mm.
And we did this shoot for 5 hours. And at the end I thought, oh, that was fine. But now I kind of don't feel well again. It was weird. It was like the camera made me feel better. I guess it's, you know, when you're focused on your work.
You do get very focused and you have some pretty strict rules. I've never been told to take my sunglasses off. Sunglasses.
Off your head, off your face, yeah. Put your phone down, yes. Put that pen down, stop fiddling.
You made me look good. We got some amazing photos though and I'm one to just, I muck in, you know, they're like, oh, can somebody go and like interact a little bit more? And I'm like, yep. So we were in this little hair salon in Uganda and they were doing braiding and I said, I want my hair braided. Can I do that? And they said, sure. And then they started to do it. And, you know, they do the braids pretty tight. So they're like yanking on my hair and I'm trying to smile, but they're also kept whispering to each other. And I sort of said to the guy, well, what are they saying? And they said, oh, your hair's a bit hard. They don't know how to do your hair. It's because their hair's, I guess, a lot coarser and different texture. So they kind of did this little, like, I don't know, plait on the top of my head and they're like, oh, you're done.
Quite what I was going for, but it's so different. Yeah, your hair and my hair as well. It's so different to African hair for sure.
Yeah, but the photos are very funny of me like smiling while my head is being yanked back.
Google, are any of those, I remember it now, but are any of those photos online?
I'll have to get some out for, put them up. I think I still have I was a bit cheeky because when I started working there, I was like, can I see them? And I basically downloaded them all to my Dropbox. I was like, I want them all. But we also had a bit of a moment. I left a bit early from Uganda. So the way I booked my trip, I had to leave early. And we did an interview each day. So Susie would video me each day and we'd sort of do a piece to camera. And I'd had a bit of a rough morning, but I was also quite sad to go and I'd had a very emotional day the day before. So I went to poor Susie's room and doing this video and I just was bawling. And I'll put the video up in as well. I'll share that. I've got it. I'm just crying my eyes out in this video and then I made Susie cry and then.
I'd rather people cry. I always cry, yeah.
I said, oh, are you comfortable for me to use that? And I said, it's real. That's how I felt.
It was great. And when it's real, it's always good. Do you remember that classroom we went to and it was set up specifically for there were some children in the class with, I think, hearing and sight impairments. Do you remember that classroom?
That might have been when I was gone when you went to the slums.
I don't know. Oh, okay. Maybe you weren't there. Eden was. Anyway, that's probably the most beautiful, and I don't mean in just how it looked, but the most beautiful classroom I've ever been to. There was so much love. There was so much thought put into really making sure that every child's needs in that class were just, it was just so lovely. I haven't thought about that in a while, actually, but it was really lovely.
Well, yeah, so we were so fortunate. I've been a World Vision sponsor since I was 17, so that's 16 years now. But I went on a trip with, I used to do the charity challenges. So I went with Lucy, and she was the photographer, and I was the tour leader for the group, and we were 20 people, yeah, to Cambodia. Mm-hmm. So that was my first, oh, no, it wasn't, I lie. That was my first time visiting a community project. I guess with a World Vision group, But I had been to visit my sponsor child in Tanzania, so I'd had that experience, and I feel like, you know, and it's hard now for everybody, obviously, but it's such a wonderful thing that World Vision offers, that sponsors can go at their own cost to visit the children and to share those stories. And when I worked with World Vision, I got to, in the media team, I actually used to share the supporter stories, and I really loved that, because seeing somebody who looks like you in the context of those communities where you sponsor sort of made it real. Because sometimes people, I think, you know, they do sponsor and all that, but it's very far away. So then to go, oh, my friend Emma, or a girl that looks like my friend, is there with that child, seeing the impact of that work, it makes such a difference. And we're very fortunate to have seen the work.
Tanzania, is your sponsor child, or was your sponsor child?
Like near to Arusha, near to Mount Kilimanjaro.
I've been to a World Vision project around there as well.
I mean, might be the same. Never could tell you where to go. Like, we drove on a bumpy road for like 2 hours, as with all World Vision projects pretty much, but we drove like the road towards Moshi, where Mount Kilimanjaro is, and then we turned off, and that's where I got the idea to do that, and then I went back. But
it was around there. That's the World Vision project I've been to, but that was my very first trip to Africa, my very first World Vision trip, actually, to Tanzania. Yeah.
No way. 2008.
7 or 8, yep.
And were they like kind of a Maasai tribe or Maasai people?
Yeah, from memory, they certainly were dressed like that. There are some, because I've been to Kenya as well, and there are some tribes that kind of look like Maasai, but they're not actually Maasai, although I'm pretty sure that was. So it's quite close to the Kenyan border as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. I love Tanzania.
Yeah, because like with the one, I think people picture, when they picture the Maasai, they picture the very tall people, and they've got all the beading work, and they've got, I think when they take those photos, they are dressed up for ceremony, because like on the day I saw them, they were wearing the cloth, like a checkered cloth, that's kind of typical Maasai, and then they gave me the beaded things. So they gave me a beaded bracelet, and they gave me a beaded necklace with a cross, and that's the beading work, is the tradition of Maasai that you see all over a lot in Africa, or Eastern Africa anyway. But that was pretty cool to have heard all your life about the Maasai people, but they didn't do the jumping and stuff. I think that's kind of very ceremonial. And
yeah, that's the, I think the jumping happens as well. It's part of the, when a guy has I'm no expert on this, but I think when a guy has chosen the woman he wants to propose to, don't him and his brothers go to the house and jump up and down, and that's part of the courting. Google it.
I will. I'll get Darius. He does fun facts at the start. So I'll be like,
fun facts. Something like that.
Please fact check us before we publish this. Okay. So I asked you about your favorite country, but it's hard to say as well, because we don't want to be rude, but what was your least favorite experience, or your least favorite country, or somewhere that you maybe wouldn't run back to?
Interestingly, not that I'm not the sort of person who says I really hate that, or I really don't. I find everything kind of interesting. I don't know if I'd rush back to Cambodia.
Really?
Yeah. Not that I didn't like it. It's kind of hard to explain. It's also obviously has a very tragic history, and recent history as well. Mm. And I did go to S21. Is that what it's called? The school?
S21 or 26. But yeah.
It's 21 or 20. Again, fact check, but it's the school and just the stories and the torture. And it's pretty, pretty horrific. I don't know. Again, I'm not saying I wouldn't go there. I'm not saying I wouldn't go there again, but there was something about the energy of the place, or I don't know, maybe you hear that many tragic stories, but...
Parents as well, I think, sometimes in, like, what succession, like, because I say that for me, like, Denmark, which I would totally go back to, but, like, I think when I went to Denmark, I'd had a bunch of amazing trips before it, and I'd also loved Sweden so much, which was so close to it, and although you don't compare, you know, they're not apples for apples or anything, but... when you come off a bunch of amazing trips and then you go somewhere that is nice, but it was also kind of nice to go, like, I've seen it, very good, all that. I don't have to go back immediately.
Yeah, and if you went to Denmark before, like you say, if you went to Denmark before you went to Sweden, you might have fallen in love with Denmark and went, yeah, to Sweden because it's the next one. Even like a lot of people, like it's way more common for people to, from what I gather, to have been to India first before they go to Bangladesh. Whereas for me, I went in the other order. Like, India's so full on and it's in your face. And I'm like, I've been to Bangladesh. Like, Bangladesh is like that. But when I went to India, I was like, oh, yeah, it's just like kind of just like Bangladesh. Yeah. And not that I didn't like India. But I just going back to your favourite country question, again, it's very hard to answer that question, but Jordan is definitely way up on the list as well. And that, and as I've mentioned earlier, that's a place I lived for a year and a half as well. And I think it is the kind of country that you actually grow to appreciate and love it the longer you're there, for me anyway.
Oh, yeah. And I think, I mean, I saw a lot of your photos and they were incredible. So if I wasn't already keen to go, you did sell it very well. I was meant to be going in October, so it's a bit of a – I was all ready to ask you for all your tips and tricks. And, I would have probably only got to Amman. But, so tell us a bit more about that time of living in – it's the Middle East, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the first time I went there was a deployment, was a month. The month had turned into 7 weeks. But that was to fill in as World Vision Syria Response Communications Director. So I filled in, and that was in winter, which is really interesting. And it snowed, which, you know, it's sort of, you don't expect it in the Middle East, even though I did my homework and my research, so I was prepared for it. And then when I was there, I found out that role, they were actually advertising the role and they were looking for someone. I thought, I like it here. So I applied for the job. And I remember doing the interview. I just arrived back in Australia and I did the interview. I was very jet lagged. I think I downed a few hundred mils of Coke just to get me through the job interview, just because I was so tired. And then I went back. I got the job and then I went back in the April. It's just such a fascinating place. It's a lot of the – it's very dry. It's very arid. But there are – the great thing about having lived there for over a year and being there through all the seasons is what you see is that in the winter when it rains, it actually, believe it or not, gets really green in the north of the country. Like, you kind of feel like you're in Europe. Beautiful hikes and wildflowers, and because of the history of the place, it's a hike is also, you know, a history lesson as well. You come across Roman ruins everywhere and mosaic floors of churches that are 1,000 years old. It's amazing. It's not just walking in the bush, it's walking in its history. And it's not like Australia where everything's organised and very ordered. Order is good sometimes, but there you're kind of walking along thinking, are we on someone's property? They go, yeah, that guy lets us walk here. And you're like, oh, okay. So it's all very... It's quite informal. Obviously, everyone's heard of Petra, which is amazing. But there's a place called Wadi Rum, which I don't know if you've heard of Wadi Rum.
No.
You have to Google it. It's amazing. It's actually, if you've seen the film The Martian with Matt Damon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was filmed there in Wadi Rum.
Mm.
Amazing desert, beautiful red earth, but these huge kind of boulders and canyons, or wadi, which is the Arabic word for canyon gorge type of thing. And it's actually not that far from the Red Sea. So you're down near the coast, but you don't feel like you are. And I've been there many different times, probably 4 different times. And you can stay in Bedouin. Bedouins are a tribe. You can stay in Bedouin camps, really basic ones or more luxurious ones. I've slept on, you know, just like a thin mattress on the desert under the stars, amazing hikes and, you know.
And the Bedouins, for the listeners, is like kind of like a Arabian Nights type, you know, sort of camp set up that, you know.
The Bedou are the people. That's the name of the tribe. But some of the camps are really basic and some of them are just
glamping.
My mum is not a roughing it kind of girl, so I took her to the most luxurious camp and she thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
I found the people really friendly and I studied Arabic. My Arabic's not that great, but I studied Arabic, which is really fun.
How's your salam alaikum?
Walaikum salam. And it's, believe it or not, I actually learned how to read the letters and write them. And,
oh my God.
The more you learn, you think that's not that complex. After a while, you think that anyway. But it was really fun practicing Arabic. And I had a lot of local friends and also international friends. And I just loved it. It's funny. Jordan seems to be one of those places that people either really love it like I did, and then you get the other group who think it's boring, and I don't get those people. I don't understand why they think it's boring.
No, I've heard very, very good things and, very rave reviews from a lot of people who go, and just that. Again, I think it's somewhere like, you know, people might have been to Egypt and things like that, but not a lot of people go to Middle Eastern countries, so Jordan seems to be a bit of an accessible one and, something, if you've never been to the Middle East, then it is quite, you know, it's very different to other places.
And it's just such an amazing part of the world. And my job was across a few countries. So I went to Lebanon a few times as well, and Turkey and Iraq, or the Kurdistan region of Iraq anyway. And I loved all of those places as well. And because I went there a few times, you're there in different seasons. The last time I was in Iraq, it was well over 45 degrees every day. And then another time I went there, it was in the middle of winter and it was cold, really cold. And I felt very comfortable there. Yeah, people hear Iraq and they have all sorts of you know, views on what that means. And you know, some of it's true, but it is really beautiful. And, I found the people really friendly. I was in the Kurdistan part. I haven't been to, you know, the other part of Iraq. I haven't been there at all. But I really enjoyed my time there.
I think it's very hard. You know, like I did see a few women go to Syria, these two other travellers who I follow who are trying to visit every UN-recognised country as well. And they went to Syria. And the really sad thing for these countries, Iraq, Syria, I mean, Iran as well, Afghanistan, is that they are countries with people and with beautiful lands that could be really, you know, somewhere that people would be interested to see and look at. But they have wars and they have, you know, troubled political situations, and that detriments the people's lives. And that's so disappointing, because there are these beautiful parts that people could see, but we're not getting to see them because they're just marked off as war and bad and dangerous. And
I don't know. I know lots of people who have been to Syria, people I met in the Middle East, but obviously they went there before the war and they raved about it. They loved it. And my job was the Syria crisis. Working on that was my job. But because of safety concerns, we weren't actually allowed to go to Syria. Even though World Vision was working there, it was local staff who were running things there. But I, you know, hopefully this war ends at some stage, and I'd love to visit Syria. I think that would be really amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I do remember you working. I did get to talk to you quite a lot while you were in Jordan, because I think I was working on the social media team at the time. So we'd get a lot of we need all your updates and things like that. So it was really cool. And then you went to the Pacific region. So you've been a lot in the Pacific of late.
Yeah. So the past few years, my role was, until 6 months ago, my role was across Papua New Guinea, Solomon Islands, Timor Leste, and Vanuatu. And I've been to each of those countries many, many times. And I'm currently still doing some work for World Vision in Vanuatu. But, yeah, and really amazing places. And the cool thing about some parts of those countries, especially somewhere like Solomon's, is they don't really have a tourist trade. Mm. Like they have, if you're a hardcore diver, that's definitely a destination that people go. But, you know, most people you meet are not hardcore divers. But there was one part of Solomons I went to on my last trip there a year ago, a province called Tuamotu, and it's just the most raw, interesting travel experience. You go to this island, you're like, you would just never go there on your own. I went there for work. We were told before we left Honiara, the capital, that we could go there and the shops have run out of food or et cetera, et cetera. So we stocked up on tins of tuna and other things that were going to last a while. And then you fly somewhere and you land on this grass runway and then get on a small boat on the open ocean. And then you arrive on a tiny island, and we stayed in the village chief, John was his name. We stayed in their hut, their guest hut. It was the best. Like it was so, and we were there for work, but it was amazing. And then to get to the other communities, you're going on a boat. It poured rain probably five different times a day. So you were wet, cold, dry, hot, wet, hot, wet, cold, dry, all throughout the day. It was the best. It was such a good experience. And oh, if this was video, I would show you. But I was given. Do you know what a conch shell is?
Yes.
A big giant. One of the village chiefs presented me. I guess because I was a visitor, a foreigner. He presented me with a conch shell and gave it to me. And I have it here. I can see it in my lounge room. So it's just amazing. Like just. Such an incredible experience.
I mean, yeah, they're experiences that, you know, you can't really sometimes plan for or, you know, yeah, they're not going to be on the typical tourist list. And, again, I think sometimes people are a bit worried about going to some of those places. I mean, I went to Papua New Guinea last year and, like you said, there's some amazing diving in these places and perhaps it is just recommended that you are going through a reputable company or something like that. That is a safer way to do it. But certainly, there you know you can go there and Timor Leste has had their issues as well. But there's also
a lot of people too. I feel very comfortable there. It's beautiful. The people are really friendly. Like you walk Dili, which is the capital city, and it's pretty small, 250,000 people. Bom dia, the Portuguese were there for about 400 years, so. The local language is a mix of Portuguese and other bits and pieces. So bon dia is good day. You walk down the street, get ready because everyone is saying good day to you, literally every person. And there's a lot of roosters. This is so random. But everywhere you go in Timor-Leste, they call it the sound of Timor-Leste. So you hear bon dia and you hear roosters and you hear them all day, every day. It's kind of funny. But, I really liked it too. And I've probably been there half a dozen times maybe, and every time for work. I haven't been there for a non-work trip, but still enjoy
it. You still get to see a bit and get to experience. And sometimes we get to experience on those trips things that, like we said before, you would never get to experience as a typical tourist. And that's to see the way people live and to see their community and to be welcomed. I think that's what blows me away on all of those trips is how welcoming people are and how much they just want to share their culture with you and invite you in. And I've always felt very humbled by that.
Well, I'm with you. There's so many. Yeah, I'm completely with you. Like I said, like that Solomon Islands, that Tuamotu experience. You just wouldn't have that experience because you wouldn't have the contacts. You wouldn't know the village chief. You wouldn't. And there's just so many. And in a place like that, like I said, it's a raw experience. A lot can go wrong. And we had to, I think, wait for a day to get fuel for the boat. And you know, you need really, really experienced boat driver. And our guy, his dad taught him about the sea. And he was amazing just the way he looked at the sea and he analysed it and he knew what was happening and you felt safe with him. You felt really safe with him. And that's a great thing about, for me, working for an organisation that I trust and know, you know, I know they have our best interests at heart and safety or security and all of that is really important. But yeah, and you just kind of, you just roll with it. You're like, wow, I didn't know I was going to end up here, but how cool is this?
I think you have a particularly wonderful attitude and like you said, a zest and interest for other people and for other cultures, which is you have to have in that role. And I think it's not for everyone, but
not for everyone.
Like we said before, it's not necessarily always glamorous, but it is certainly always interesting. And always there's, you never know what's going to happen on any given day. So, well, I'm so grateful for you coming and chatting to me, and it was a pleasure traveling with you, and it was a pleasure working with you, and I'm glad to always have you around now to get tips. Going to Timor Leste, I'm going to Jordan, what do you say? I'm going to Iraq today, what's happening?
You've been to now, you've probably been to more than I have.
Nah, I reckon we'd be on par. I reckon if you sat down and really wrote, but I'm at 64, 57 are UN recognized. So that's my goal now. So I'm being quite selective in future about where I go, and even trying to plan a trip with Matthew. He's like, oh, we can't go there because you've already been, or we got to come on, we're trying to get the country count. And I'm like, but I really want to take you to Nepal and do a trek. And he's like, okay, well, I guess we'll
do that. That's another really beautiful country. We can go on.
We could. I'll have to get you back. I'll get you back. But thank you for your time, and happy lounge room traveling.
Thank you for listening to this great chat between Emma and Susie. Did you enjoy it as much as I did, Emma?
I loved it. It was just so nice to catch up, and especially this, we did record it during COVID. Susie was in lockdown. So just really nice to see a lovely, friendly face, and just to relive some travels. Super fun.
Yeah, sound like you guys were having a great time.
Look, and we'd love to hear what you think. I'd love to hear, you know, Susie went to a lot of places. So if you have any comments, questions, please do email us, info@lovelytravels.com. Where else can they find us, Darius?
Well, they could go on Instagram at Lovely Travels. They could check out our Facebook group, the Lovely Travels Facebook group. They could check out our brand spanking new Facebook page, Lovely Travels. Or they can get more information on the website, which is lovelytravels.com. That's lovely with two L's in the middle.
I wonder if people are ever like, who's this Darius guy? This lady Lovely is just chatting all about herself. I'm heavily branded this thing. But Darius is also lovely, but with a single L. So he's included in the lovely traveling.
Thanks, guys, for making me part of this lovely community.
Yeah.
Plus, we decided an episode or two ago that I'm delightful, Darius.
Yes. Agreed. So we're going to have to change the pages to Lovely Travels. Lovely and Delightful Travels.
I'm just wondering, like, no one has ever said, like, where is your website, Darius? And there is a website that I have, but I mostly use it for getting employed. So
if you want to see that, email us and we'll happily provide it. But he's gainfully employed, so you can't have him.
Okay, but we can talk about it.
And it not by me. I do not pay. This is a mutually agreed givement of time.
Yeah, it's all about giving and taking, right? I give and you take.
Take. It's a passion project. We're having fun.
We are having fun. We're learning lots. We're filling the airwaves with our lovely voices. Yeah. We're meeting new friends.
And we absolutely, honestly though, absolutely love it. Love hearing from you guys. So please do head to those channels. Remember to rate, review, subscribe, especially on iTunes. It really helps. But, you know, subscribing on your Google Podcasts or your Spotify, also super great. And then just tell your friends, old school.
Tell your friends, yeah.
Send the link.
For every 10 friends you tell, your next coffee is free.
I just don't think we can make those promises, Darius.
No, if they tell 10 friends and come to either of our houses, they will get free coffee.
Okay. That's, See you next week.
See you next week, everyone. Bye-bye.